Blog Talk Radio.
Here's something to think about. Do you know who's talking to your kids about alcohol? Is it the kids with the fake IDs? Or friends drinking at parties? Or maybe someone offering to buy them beer from the local convenience store? Who is talking to your kids about alcohol? Shouldn't it be you? For more information on how to talk with your kids about underage drinking, visit niaaa.nih.gov. Brought to you by the Department of Health and Human Services, the National Institutes of Health, and the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism. Good morning. This is Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes, and I'm your host, Joy Keyes. I want to thank you for listening this morning. This month is Alcohol Awareness Month, and that's why I read that PSA. It's very important that you talk to your children about alcohol and also about other drugs. People don't think of alcohol as a drug, but unfortunately, alcohol addiction is one of the top addictions in the United States. This morning, though, we're not going to be talking about alcoholism. We are going to be talking about fair trade. What is it? How to get involved in it? How is it good for the environment? Certifying your goods and things of that nature. And I have a specialist expert in the field this morning, Carmen K. Yetzi. She's the executive director of the Fair Trade Federation. Carmen completed her master's degree with the focus on the impact of regional integration on good governance from American University. Presently, she acts as vice chair of the board of directors for 10,000 Villages of Alexandria and is the director of the Abyssinian Fund, chairs the Millennium Development Goals Task Force for the UN Association of the National Capital Area, and served on the editorial board of the Journal of Fair Trade Studies. Also this morning, I have Meg Widholm, and she is a fair trade enthusiast with a commitment to the abolition of sweatshops and equal pay for equal work. She has done volunteer work for 10,000 Villages, which is a nonprofit fair trade retail store with locations in the United States and Canada. Good morning, both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Just want to start off with Carmen and talking about the history of fair trade and how it got started. Just tell the audience a little bit about that.
Absolutely, and good morning to everyone. I'm delighted to be here. We date the beginning of fair trade back to 1946, when a woman named Edna Ruth Byler was working as a volunteer in Puerto Rico. And what she realized was that the women she was working with were making a beautiful product and yet couldn't find a way to sell and trade their product to lift themselves out of poverty. And so she began to work with them and to trade with them and to bring these great products back to her small town of Akron, Pennsylvania. And what she realized over time was that consumers saw what a great product it was and were interested in buying it, and also that these trading relationships enabled the women to change their own lives. And so those are very much the ideals and the values on which fair trade was founded. A few years later, another group called Serve International actually began working with German refugees. And so we know that fair trade's been around for over 60 years, trying to create these trading partnerships that are based on dialogue and transparency and respect and enable people to work and to trade and to change their own lives through their hard work.
So now, how did you get started with the Fair Trade Federation?
Oh, well, I had actually been working in a completely different field and had been volunteering, like Meg, at the 10,000 Villages here in the Washington, D.C. area. And when my position at the Fair Trade Federation came open, it was a wonderful intersection of the work I'd been doing as a volunteer in fair trade and then my professional background in program management and outreach and fundraising and all of those other pieces. So the Federation was a great fit for me, and hopefully I've been a good fit for it.
Let me tell the people that your web address is fairtradefederation.org. Again, that's fairtradefederation.org. And their mission is the Fair Trade Federation is a trade association that strengthens and promotes North American organizations fully committed to fair trade. The Federation is part of a global fair trade movement, building equitable and sustainable trading partnerships and creating opportunities to alleviate poverty. Now, that's the key issue right there, the issue of poverty, because we're here in America, and I'm sitting right now, I'm at a computer, I got my phone, I got my, you know, speakers, everything, and there are people around the world who are just trying to get some rice. So talk to us about how this can help alleviate poverty in other parts of the world.
Fair trade, first and foremost, is trying to create opportunities for what we call economically and socially marginalized producers, those who are typically outside of the trading system, those for whom there are many structural barriers and cultural in many cases or economic barriers to being a part of trade and being able to have access to other markets. And so in many cases, that's women. About 76% of fair trade production is actually done by women, because in many countries you don't get much more economically and socially marginalized than that. So we know that by reaching these communities and injecting a little bit of change, a little bit of opportunity, a little bit of economic
hope,
commerce,
really,
hope, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely.
We are also injecting the ability for them to send their kids to school, to have access to health care, which is obviously also an issue here in the States, and to really invest in their own long-term sustainable development, because it isn't a charity. It's not about a handout that comes and goes with the whims of some foreign government or foreign funding agency. It's about these people earning and supporting themselves through the long term.
Meg had a couple of questions. Meg, you want to talk about some of your concerns?
Yes. One of the things that I'm really interested in learning more about is what can be certified. What is the certification process? Does it require, comes from a developing country? Can things from the United States be fair trade certified?
Well, let's unpack that term a little bit. Within the global system, there are actually two bodies. One is called the Fair Trade Labeling Organization, and they have 19 national affiliates. So the Fair Trade Labeling Organization, or FLO for short, has a partner in the United States called Transfer USA and a partner in Canada called Transfer Canada. And they certify agricultural products. And that term certify is actually relating to a specific process about auditing an agricultural product from what we call point of origin, so a farm, to point of sale, so your shelf at your local grocery store. So right now, the term certification only pertains to agricultural items. And people might see that certified label in their regular stores. But it's only pertaining to that bag of coffee or that bushel of bananas or that ton of cocoa, whatever it is. It doesn't say anything else about what the company does. It doesn't say anything else about the coffee next to it or anything else except that bag of beans. The other organization is called the World Fair Trade Organization. And we at the Fair Trade Federation are their partner here in North America. And what we do is evaluate a business for its full commitment to fair trade, no matter what they sell. So some of our members do work in coffee and bananas and chocolate, and some of them work in baskets and jewelry and clothing and home decor and many other items. So while...
Well, let me ask you a question. You said this is just agricultural items. How do the housewares, non-agricultural things, get certified? Are there not? There is no way for that now, or is it something in the future?
Again, the term certified is a specific term that relates to agriculture, but there are many other items that have been traded according to fair trade principles. So within the question itself about how do items become certified only relates to that specific process. So a store like 10,000 Villages, which definitely practices fair trade principles, and for those who are interested in what FTF says are the 9 principles of fair trade, it's fairtradefederation.org/explore. They can bring in no matter what kind of item they sell, we know that these 9 principles can be lived. So even though the great jewelry from Villages is not fair trade certified by Transfer USA or by FLO, that organization I mentioned, it still has been traded under fair trade principles. So, Meg, that's one part of the question that you asked about certification. Now, I can talk a little bit about how a company becomes a member of the Fair Trade Federation, and we have a rigorous process that asks a number of questions and gathers information about how a company lives each of our 9 principles. But that's different than being certified. Many companies who have very little actual commitment to fair trade might carry a certified agricultural product. You'll see certified products at your local Walmart. You'll see them at Starbucks. You'll see them at Target. Even though the company makes, that's a very small part of what the company actually does. Whereas
what about Starbucks? Starbucks has some fair trade. Also, Meg, you were telling me about Nestle has some fair trade, but very small percent. Are you familiar with that, Carmen?
I am, and it is. It's a very, very little part of what they do, even if sometimes it's a much broader piece of the marketing that they do.
Now, is there some place a person can go if they're interested in trying to support fair trade, like a list of companies that only like are 100% fair trade? Do you have that on your website?
We do. At fairtradefederation.org/members, folks can find all of our members who are, again, those fully committed, 150% invested in fair trade organizations. They can sort by what retail stores are near them. And we will perhaps talk a little bit about supporting local independent businesses. These are local boutique stores in your communities that really are invested in fair trade.
I will tell you, I love 10,000 Villages. I've bought tons of presents from 10,000 Villages, earrings, stuff for other people, stuff for myself that I probably should have given to somebody else. And so I want to tell people if they are thinking, well, what kind of products does a fair trade place sell? I mean, you know, is it something I can really use? They have beautiful, beautiful items. 10,000 Villages is the one in Philadelphia is on, Walnut Street between 10th and 11th, Meg?
That's right. Very unique products, too.
Very
absolutely
unique. Yes, definitely. And I'm on the Fair Trade Federation website right now, and the page that Carmen was just speaking about in terms of finding members, you can look by your state, by your city, the type of organization, very easy to use. Also on their website, how to get more involved. Meg wanted to talk to you about some pricing issues. You had a question about pricing, Meg?
Yes, I was wondering about how do you determine in that local economy what is the fair price to pay the artisan, and then in turn make sure that the store sells it without charging some gouging markup to the consumer, that it's actually fair pricing.
Well, thank you, Meg, first for noting that it does have to happen in a local context. I'm sure what you all experience in Philadelphia is quite different than what we experience here in Washington. So it does, and the same is true whether you're in rural Peru or in Lima. When we talk about a fair price, we talk about the true cost of labor time, the true cost of materials, the true cost of sustainable growth for that artisan, as well as other factors, overhead, and all of those different pieces that any regular business would account when setting the price. So we do try to look at it in a context. We also look at it in the context of what a living wage is in that community. And what we mean by that is, does the amount of money paid for labor time allow people to cover their basic costs for food, for education, for shelter, for all of those different very common basic things that we count on here in the U.S., but for many people, really, it is sometimes a choice between do I have a roof over my head or do I put food on my table? So making sure that the prices for labor incorporate all of those factors and are at a level that enable people to address all of those factors. So that's on the artisanal side.
Really, I want to say also, it's not just the issue of poverty in other countries. I mean, we have a huge economic crisis here in America. So this might be a good business opportunity for someone to get into. Meg, for example, she's doing her business. Meg, you want to tell people about your business that you started?
Well, at this point, it's really startup. I'm looking for a retail location. I've done a few craft fairs with musical instruments and cookware from Colombia, placemats from Indonesia, just really, really beautiful houseware type stuff.
You can find her on Facebook. Don't forget to tell me on Facebook.
Fair Mojo.
Fair Mojo on Facebook.
I also want to pull in locally produced items, which is why I was asking about that, with local farms and produce, things like that.
Joy, if it's also of use to your readers, a number of our member companies are growing, and we have an active job board. I know this is quite an issue nowadays. fairtradefederation.org/jobs. And we regularly do post opportunities, many paid, full-time, some part-time, as well as volunteer and internship opportunities for people who want to spend some of their non-professional time in these endeavors.
Helping them. Yeah, I'm on the site right now. They have marketing manager, retail store manager, operations manager, and they're from different areas, New York, Kentucky, Oregon. Colorado. So no matter where you are in the country, you're listening to the show, they have a lot of different job opportunities on their site. What about World Fair Trade Day, which is May 8th, I believe? Yes?
Yes, and we're very excited, and it really relates back to your point about all of the different ways people have to convert parts of their life. The theme this year is Fair Trade My Home. So looking at your everyday life and thinking about how you can convert small things you were going to do anyway into fair trade, whether it's the coffee that you drink or the mug that you drink it out of, the decor, the gifts, all of those things that you listed, Joy, really offer opportunities to make small changes and yet create a tremendous impact for farmers and for artisans.
Now, on the page, there's also, we were going to have Jeff Goldman from the Fair Trade Resource Network today. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to make the show, but that's also another great organization. I did put their web address in the chat room here, and I'll try to put their web address up on my page after the show. And again, the Carmen is from the Fair Trade Federation, and their website is fairtradefederation.org. The other great ones are World Trade, World Fair Trade, WFTO.com. Carmen also mentioned Fair Trade Labeling Organization, and that's fairtrade.net. And on her page for Fair Trade Federation, they have a whole thing about World Fair Trade Day. May is Fair Trade Month. I'm sorry, celebrate October as Fair Trade Month, but then Fair Trade Day is May. So you can go up there and look up things going on in your area, in your community, and try to get involved if you don't want to start a business, just to spend a couple of your hours helping another business, reduce the poverty in the world. Now, what are some of the problems people face in trading, say, in Africa or Asia? What are some things that people need to look out for in terms of taxes and shipping, and what's the deal with that?
Well, in many cases, it's the same challenges faced by any small business. So folks would need to be aware of the different trading relationships that the United States or Canada has with parts of the world. So there are special trading arrangements with Latin America, special ones with Africa, so making sure as you would bring a product in, if you wanted to be an importer, you were following all of those guidelines. There are many changing pieces of legislation about testing for lead, testing for different elements that Congress and other legislators have recognized are dangerous. But
do you have training classes for people to help them understand this whole process of trading and importing?
We do. We have a number of support pieces, particularly focused on our member companies, to help make sure that they are being compliant and understanding all of the different rules as they change. One of the interesting pieces is that while super large conventional companies are often exempt from things like testing for lead in children's products, it's small businesses, whether they are producing in Philadelphia or producing in Nairobi, that are most often subject to these kinds of rules. So we really try to make sure our members are up to date and compliant so that they can continue to offer their great products to consumers.
Meg, what are some of your concerns that you had when you were trying to trade? I know you had a little story about the issue of shipping and things of that nature.
Right. Well, I was working with a spice farmer in Jamaica to bring some of his products up here, and we're still working on it. It's just there's, so many different things to consider with the governmental taxes and laws and the FDA and what, fair trade labeling or fair trade, the Fair Labeling Act to make sure that you have all of the contents and, there's just a lot of components to it. But Carmen, I had heard that actually there are some countries like Nepal where it's just completely impossible to even try to set up fair trade agreements with the artisans because the government is just so controlling and not willing to let the goods out of the country. Is that right?
Actually, we have a number of members working in Nepal, and we're always happy to make recommendations and to connect people who want to trade in those areas with producer groups or to connect great retailers like yourself, Meg, with folks who are already importing from those places. Nepal and other countries where living our principle about supporting safe and empowering working conditions can be tricky because of concerns about people organizing, concerns about people coming together, those can make the situation challenging, but certainly not impossible.
Okay.
Let me mention to the people, there is a World Fair Trade Day website, and that's wftday.org. That's wftday.org. Beautiful website in a variety of languages. and you could go up there and see what's going on around the globe for World Fair Trade Day, which is May 8th. So that's another place you can check out. And again, Carmen's website for the Fair Trade Federation is fairtradefederation.org. And you can go up there and learn about the membership. Now, does it cost to become a member? Does it cost for this process? And how much?
Well, there's a $50 screening fee. And then from there, dues are prorated based on sales. So for companies that have sales under $75,000, dues are only $175. And they go all the way up to $4,100 for companies over $30 million. So each year, a company has to submit their annual dues, as well as updated information on how they continue to live the 9 principles that we ask. And so that's part of the regular cost for FTF membership.
So now about the classes, how often are they held? Is it online? Can somebody get a one-on-one consultation if they're interested in getting involved in fair trade?
All of this falls under the strengthen part of our mission that you read, Joy.
Mm-hmm.
And so for the courses, there are 2 different ways that we share information. There is a lot of information, particularly for folks looking to start a fair trade business, at fairtradefederation.org/startabiz, B-I-Z. And there we talk and have some links about just getting started, getting incorporated, all the IRS rules, all of those different pieces. Then for members, we do have many opportunities through our online Fair Trade Federation University. We have an active listserv where people post questions and inquiries and say, I'm having a terrible time getting items out of Nepal. How did somebody
mm-hmm.
else do it? So we really try to celebrate that community and to learn from each other. But for those who are not yet members, we also regularly connect people who are interested in buying in Nepal, Meg, I'm going to pick on you, and then with people who are already doing it to say how, so that they can also learn from each other. We very much want to inspire more people to come into fair trade, to begin to practice fair trade in their business, whether it's one great product line in a shop or in a cafe, or whether it's truly the commitment of their whole business. And we also regularly connect store buyers who call and say, I run a great boutique in media PA, and I want to bring in very cool fair trade toys. Who do you know? And we send them a great list of vendors. So we really want to help people make those kinds of connections and to understand how easy it is to make these changes. One thing, we had talked a little bit about our member directory. We also enable people to see where they can shop online. So even if you're in a place that might not have a fully committed fair trade retail store, you can easily bring it right to your doorstep, and it'll show up in a lovely package with all the great items you ordered. So we also have opportunities for schools, for fundraisers, for events, particularly around World Fair Trade Day. We hope to rally many different communities to introduce people to this idea or to deepen and expand their understanding of it.
I think it's great. You mentioned earlier about the issue of helping women, because a lot of times around the globe, unfortunately, women are not as free to do what they would like to do to help the community. But with men and women working together, the communities can really rise up. And same here in America with this job situation. On your website, you had a press release about it's from the Chicago newspaper, Chicago Business. It says, as the economy skids along and secure, rewarding employment remains out of reach for many, a few young women are creating their own dream jobs working for themselves. It talks about Erin Estelle. She's 27, and she was working in sales, and she lost her job, and her husband said, why don't you start selling your jewelry? So if you're listening to the show and you're thinking, like, well, how can I start a business? I don't have a lot of money. I don't know this and that. What kind of hobbies do you have where you can start working with other people, maybe buying your beads, buying your instruments if you're a musician, and that way you help yourself, but you're helping someone else in the process. You know, in terms of the issue of poverty, you don't have to be on the street homeless to be poor or to feel like a sense of relative poverty. So this might be something you could do, getting involved in fair trade. What are some things that you guys are doing for World Fair Trade Day locally?
Well, many of our members across the U.S. and Canada are going to be hosting great events, whether it's a bake-off or We've just posted, for those who are interested, some suggestions about how to host Fairtrade Olympics. So just really fun games that you can play in your community that we tried to put a bit of a Fairtrade slant on. So whether it's Fairtrade soccer or different take on Olympic games like weightlifting, triathlons, all of these different things, and all of that's in our Get Involved section. And many of them will host coffee tastings or lots of different ways to just bring people together and have a good time.
I have a question in the chat room. What's your phone number if somebody wanted to call the organization?
Sure. Our number is 202-636-3547, and we're open 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, Eastern Standard Time. For those interested in joining FTF, our email is screening@fairtradefederation.org, and all the information is also at fairtradefederation.org/join.
So this is great. What are some tips and tricks that you can give new owners starting out? What are some things they need to look out for?
Well, first of all, make sure that, like any business, you have a good plan and a good foundation in place. That doesn't mean you have to be an expert entrepreneur, but understanding all of the different pieces about financial pieces, legal pieces, and then also the marketing piece, being ready to tell people about your great story.
Mm-hmm.
We regularly, as I said, connect buyers with suppliers, so it's very easy to find products that will meet the kinds of consumers that you want to reach out to. So knowing who you want to reach out to is also important. Meg talked about the fact that she sells at fairs and sales. That's a way that many, many companies get started. So knowing who goes to those events. Are they young families? Are they older adults whose kids are gone and out of college? Are they high school students, college students? Kind of knowing who's going to be around
to
have product that will meet their needs. And the last piece is that we're actually putting together the largest fair trade gathering in North American history in Boston in September 10, 11, 12. So that is also a great way to come, to get educated, and to meet all of the wonderful people who are part of this community. We'll have entrepreneurs there, students, faith community members, artisans, farmers. It's going to be a huge celebration, and there's more information about that on our website as well.
Well, I want to thank you so much, Carmen, Yetzi, for coming on today, and thank you, Meg, for joining us. Meg, do you have any closing questions? We have about 2 minutes left.
Just one thing I was wanting to mention is when I was volunteering at the 10,000 Villages, an interesting thing they said was that a man had stopped shopping at their store because everything was starting to look so well packaged, and that was because 10,000 Villages worked so closely with the artisans to give them feedback about how to make their product better. And, you know, I just thought it was inspiring that it's working, that, you know, the artisans are benefiting from it, and, you know, and their products are becoming even more appealing, so much so that they look too good for this guy.
I have been very spoiled by the high-end, the great chocolates and coffees and products that our members have. So I don't think I could ever go back. It's terrible.
Well, I want to thank both of you guys for coming on this morning. Thank you, Carmen, for sharing all your knowledge, and thank you, Meg, for sharing your stories about going into business. And I want to thank the listeners for joining me this morning. You can follow me on twitter.com/joykeys. You can become a fan of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys on Facebook. Also, share with your friends that they can download this podcast from iTunes. Stay tuned. We're going to be talking with author Carlene Bryce in a couple minutes, and her book, Orange, Mint, and Honey, and also about her upcoming projects and new books. So stay tuned if you have time for the second half of Saturday Mornings with Joy Keys. Thank you so much, ladies, for joining me.
Thank you.
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at autismspeaks.org. Autism Speaks, it's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.